Welcome back to WordBalloon.com, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress, and after a long hiatus, we're back with new episodes and a great new guest, Tim Seeley of Devil's Due Publishing. Before we get to our interview with Tim, I just wanted to make a note that if you're in the Florida area this weekend and attending the FX convention, make sure you come by and say hi. I'll be at a couple of the panels moderating, and there's a great guest lineup there. Lots of Wildstorm artists and writers, and also Steve Niles is going to be there, Matt Wagner, Gene Ha, Dave Johnson, a real all-star group of people, Chuck Dixon. I don't want to leave anybody out. And also great television and film guests as well. So if you do stop by the FX convention, make sure you come by and say hi. Now on to our guest, artist-writer Tim Seeley. Tim is best known for his work on Forgotten Realms for R.A. Salvatore, the G.I. Joe line, not only as an artist in the early days of Devil's Due, but currently Tim is writing the G.I. Joe Transformer miniseries, and Tim's own creation, Hack Slash, soon to be a major motion picture. Tim's love of the horror genre is self-evident in books like Hack Slash and in the works anthology, featuring adaptations of some of the great films of Troma Pictures, and the upcoming Loaded Bible 2, which features the classic matchup of Jesus Christ versus vampires. So without further ado, our conversation begins with Tim going back to his early comic book professional beginnings. So was Devil's Due your first professional job?
Yeah, I guess, technically, I did do stuff for Avatar before I started at Devil's Due. I was doing titty books, though, like a lot of booby stuff.
What kind of titty stuff? Let's talk about that for a second.
I drew, because, I was working at a children's book company at the time when I was living in Minneapolis. This is about 5 years ago now, I guess. So, I mean, you can imagine drawing, you know, children's books all day, and I was kind of like, wow, I really like to draw some comic book stuff, but I can't take anything that's too many pages or try to take anything that's too much work because I don't really know if I can do this yet. So I had him meet William at Avatar at like a convention. I showed him stuff, and he's like, oh, yeah, you'd be perfect for some of the girl stuff we got. I was like, oh, okay. And then I got the script. It was, like, all naked stuff, and it was awesome to draw, though, because, you know, during the day I'm drawing cutesy educational stuff. At night I'm drawing Pandora getting her top torn off, and, you know, it was pretty fun. So
well, that's really cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was, like, probably my first time, and most people probably will never see it because I don't think I did the – nothing I did on there was any kind of earth-shaking work, but it was really fun, and the writers were, you know, had fun scripts, and I just come home from my job of drawing a, how to make a potato clock, and I just come home and sit in front of the TV and draw areolas and stuff. So.
Nice, very nice. Well, did the wrong portfolio ever work, you know, show up at the children's bookstore or anything like that?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Well, I at the time I was working at a children's book company, I started thinking, you know, when I'm working on this Avatar stuff, maybe I should use a different name because, I don't know, all I could think is my boss would be like, Tim, come in the office. I'd go in there and be like, you know what I mean? I was terrified by that.
Sure. Andre LeFleur or something like that. You need like a good like porn name and everything for that.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to think of something. I was always like, maybe I should try to do something kind of gothy and be like, you know, Grizz Grimley, and I'll have like a name like, you know, like Gray Morose or something. I don't know. But I just decided to keep my own name on it, and fortunately no one ever put it together. So.
Well, that's cool. So then from Avatar to Devil's Due?
Yeah, I mean, I'd known Blaylock for a while because he and I used to – I self-publish stuff now. I would always do like mini comics and crap and go to conventions. But, I mean, I never did like superhero stuff or anything. So, you know, I never really knew the Marvel guys or any of that kind of stuff. But I knew Blaylock because he was also sort of into that stuff, and we'd known each other since we were like 18 or something. So when he got the license to do G.I. Joe, he just called me up and he's like, hey, you want to think about maybe, you know, coming down here and see if you like, you know, working as a staff artist? So, you know, I couldn't have – I mean, that's exactly what I wanted to do with stuff. I was working as a staff artist at a children's book company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so – I'm just not the kind of guy that sits at home very well and does freelance. So, you know, when that opportunity came up, it's like, you can be a staff artist like you usually are, except you can draw comics. So that was just too perfect, you know.
Sure. Is working at Devil's Due then really that bullpen experience that, you know, fans would envision the Marvel experience might be?
Yeah, it is. And I don't think they've done that at many comic book companies besides CrossGen in years. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's you know, we've got all our people are in the same area, and it's, you know, we all spend way too much time looking at each other. We just draw, I draw all day, and, you know, crank does the web stuff, and Josh is doing whatever Josh does. And so it's very much like that sort of what people envision, you know, happens in comic book companies, which is actually mostly done through the mail.
How many different artists besides yourself are there, you know, working on interiors or covers or whatever?
Everyone else is freelance. I'm the only artist in-house.
So right just the
now.
Three of you.
I'm sure that'll change. But yeah, I mean, most of it's done freelance. But basically, like, when I first started there, my job was to sort of fix stuff, you know, because we do a lot of stuff with licensing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So you have to change stuff because maybe Hasbro says, oh, you know, Snake Eyes shouldn't be wearing pink boxers, you know, whatever. So it would be my job to fix that. And there was enough of that initially, and we were all doing so many different jobs that, you know, I would edit one book, and I would do art corrections on another, and I would do lettering changes, whatever. And then as time went on, it was just like, hey, why don't you just sit down and draw a book, and we'll get it done on time, you know? So now basically I just go in the morning at 9 o'clock, and then I sit with a pencil until 5, and then I go home and, you know, watch bad TV and horror movies and stuff, so, you know.
And think about writing, I guess.
Yeah, there's always that. I always forget, oh, wait, in fact, even tonight I have to sit down and write so bad horror movies for me, except the ones that I'm making.
How fast are you as far as interiors doing pages?
I'm really fast on interiors. Sometimes I think I'm too fast because I'm like, why does it take all these other guys so long, and how come they're so famous? But I definitely do. I can do a page and a half easy. I can do two pages if I need to. And that's pretty much just always, like, not even really rushing. It's just sort of just a normal schedule. But I've also noticed that if I slow down, it doesn't change how it looks. Like, if I try to take more time, it doesn't look any different, really.
Okay.
So I think that just must be what I'm comfortable with. I know, you know, some guys can take a day and a half and do one page, but I'll never understand how that can happen. So,
do layouts come easy for you as far as envisioning what the page is going to be?
You know, so I've been kind of lucky because I haven't done a lot of the sort of Marvel-style scripts where it's going to take me a lot to break stuff down because my scripts come in already sort of panel by panel. So basically it's just the camera angle at that point.
Okay.
And, you know, you do it long enough, it's you almost have to watch out so you don't just do automatic reaction and just do the same shit all the time.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, every morning I just lay out a page and draw it. And I don't lay out the whole book first. I know a lot of people do that. So I think it just kind of keeps me fast, keeps me interested, you know. It seems to come kind of easy. There are moments where I'm just, like, banging my head against the wall, but I think that's everybody, so.
Is Forgotten Realms and G.I. Joe the two books that you're, you know, mostly working on then on a monthly basis, or?
Well, right now, I finished up my Forgotten Realms stint, and I'm doing Bob Salvatore's other series, which is Demon Wars.
Demon Wars,
I'm still
okay.
Working on that. But I do stuff for G.I. Joe, like, you know, I actually did, like, half of a book. I just kind of helped fill in, and, you know, they basically... I've been working on G.I. Joe, even if not in the context of art, you know, just like either just as an editor or you know, just proofreading or going to conventions. I've been working on G.I. Joe for so long, they know if they need to crack something out, it's like, oh, I know my G.I. Joe, so I'll do that. But right now I'm drawing Demon Wars, so.
Okay, and is Andrew Dabb writing Demon Wars as well, or is there a different writer?
He's the man for the adaptations of Bob Salvatore.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, how did that association... come in? Is it all through Devil's Due that you happen to get that assignment?
Yeah, I mean, when Josh had been talking about doing Forgotten Realms for a lot, or D&D in general, for quite a while, and then when we got the license to that, the first thing I said is, man, you've got to let me draw Dragonlance, because when I was a kid, you know, we all read Dragonlance books, and I was obsessed with them. But of course, he said, well, we're starting the Drist books first. And I was like, oh, I'll do those, because I read that book also. So, But then I had a really good time doing those books. It was sort of more on my alley. It's a little bit more monsters, a little bit more of that kind of stuff. And just doing those books, I ended up becoming pretty good friends with Bob Salvatore because, you know, we'd get stuck with each other at Gen Con. We'd stuck with each other at San Diego. And, you know, we just happened to have, like, a very similar sense of humor. Like, Bob's a real – he's just a sarcastic, wise-ass dude. He's this very, like, you know, East Coast, like, really funny bastard.
Okay.
And the first time I met him, you know, I said, oh, I've read your books when I was 13. He's like, thanks for making me feel old, you fucking asshole. And I was like, wow, we're going to get along great. So we get along really well. And, like, you know, when we decided we'd do Demon Wars, you know, it was kind of just an automatic thing that I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. And Bob was happy, and, you know, he wanted Andrew to do it. So it's kind of worked out perfect because I get to do the same kind of stuff, but I don't have this sort of big company thing. You know, obviously, Forgot Realms owned by Wizards of the Coast. So,
sure.
In this case, it's just Bob. So if I send something off and he hardly, you know, he's just like, whatever, do what you want, I trust you. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Now, are these original stories? Are these all still based on, you know, the original run of the books?
Yeah, these are based, there's seven novels in the Demon War series. I'm working on Demon Awakens, which is the first novel. So it's just, you know, it's another translation of a novel into a graphic novel, which, you know, I mean, I think we've kind of found that there's this whole market for that because people who read the novels are curious to see them visualized.
Certainly.
And then people who haven't, maybe reluctant sort of reader, are interested to see something that's, you know, a little less difficult on the brain for reading.
Sure.
So, but yeah, it seems like there's a real market for it. So, I mean, we were a little initially kind of surprised, but then we're like, oh, this is the way to go. And so we'll do Demon Wars and we'll do as much as, you know, Dragonlance Forgotten Realms as we can. So
that's cool. And a good response from the gamer community as far as these adaptations goes?
Yeah, it's actually, it's really interesting because they sell really well to that. I mean, it's weird because in the comic shops, these books, not very good.
Yeah.
But in the bookstores, they sell like, way out there, like on the level of, you know, a level even beyond most Marvel and DC trades. So, but then it's weird because, I go to comic convention and it's like, there's not the people, I'm still signing stuff for G.I. Joe, basically, as Hack Flash, you know?
Sure.
We're not doing a lot of Demon Wars or not doing a lot of Dragonlance stuff, but then we go to Gen Con, and that's just a whole other animal. It's just, you know, these are the people that are buying the books right here, you know? So it's really, and you know, I haven't games since I was like 18, so it's like stranger in a strange land, you know?
Sure. Well, that's, you know, that is the thing, and I'm curious about that in terms of, it's funny, you're a conduit, the guys doing Warhammer now, guys like Dan Abnett and stuff, that
Definitely.
Like could really bring in that gamer audience to more comic books if they're interested. And yeah, I guess this is still the beginning period where, you know, we'll see who, you know, makes the crossover, either direction, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, too, because the there's even a crowd that even is not even the gaming people, it's just fantasy fans.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's like a whole other group of people. It's just weird because, you know, it seems like every time I start a new project, I'm dealing with a whole new group of readership, and you're trying to, like, figure out what they like and if you're doing it right, you know. It's like getting a new girlfriend every time, you know. You got to retrain yourself, so.
Very cool.
It's been pretty cool.
What do you think, in terms of G.I. Joe, and I don't mean to get heavy, but, like, with everything that's going on in the world, I always think that G.I. Joe is in that unique place about where its roots really were in the U.S. Army, but it's become this totally different animal from its transition in the 80s to really being more fantasy special ops, but, you know, kind of its own little goofy world. Do you ever get the desire to put a little more realism in the stories? I know that there's a line that's slightly more adult that Devil's Due has been flirting with, and it's cool that Hasbro kind of opened things up to allow something like that. But where, you know, I just wonder, do you ever have any thoughts about like that, or is it just, it's the G.I. Joe world and that's cool?
I don't know, man. I think my philosophy is probably different than sort of maybe Devil's Due in general. I like to look at G.I. Joe as it's the farthest, it's got the elements and the sort of, the top level coat of military stuff. But, you know, I just hope it always sort of remains on that sort of level of, because in the real world, military stuff gets so, I mean, I know I personally am not a fan of you know, the current use of the military by the administration and all that sort of stuff, but I don't ever want G.I. Joe to have to be that, because G.I. Joe should always be about just the sort of fun, you know, we're the good guys, we're not going to be wrong. Cobra is the bad guy, obviously, there's no shades of gray here, it's black and white, and G.I. Joe's more sort of about the sort of shoot 'em up with the James Bond villains and superhero elements. I mean, to me, I hope it never, I hope no one does ever do a, you know, the G.I. Joe team goes to Iraq or something.
Yeah.
I just think that ruins what's good about it. And like looking back when I read the old series and Larry Hama was a big military aficionado and a big fan of, you know, the sort of that genre. But, and he put a lot of elements of things that were realistic in it, but it would always be, you know, I mean, like you said, there's a line, and I think, I personally just don't want to put politics into it. I guess my take on G.I. Joe is if you ever read my G.I. Joe versus Transformers series, that's my take on G.I. Joe. Like, it's just big and dumb and colorful,
sure.
And the characters are really likable, and, you know, they get along, and, you know, it's all about sort of like, we're fighting for you, and, you know, it's more about that than sort of, you know, the minutiae of military life and the problems concerning, you know, the military in global politics. Like, there's a place for that, but God, I hope it's not in G.I. Joe.
I'm curious about Hack Slash. I know it's doing well. Man, this really went from being a quarterly to finding its audience and now being in production for a feature film. That's fantastic, man.
And a monthly series.
And a monthly series, yes.
I mean, it's weird because it's like every time if I do, you know, interviewing stuff, we talk about, people are like, oh, it's a success. But I'm like, really? but I guess I have gotten to keep doing it. That's really cool.
Okay.
And I know, like, it's interesting because I think you can, I don't know if this is the case for other people, but I know when I go to a convention or something, or when I get asked for interviews, I usually don't get asked about, like, G.I. Joe or Forgotten Realms. It's like, usually people just ask you about the stuff that, and I don't know, maybe because they're the only ones that recognize who you are, but it's usually like, oh, Hack Slash or Loaded Bible. So,
oh, we're getting to those. Don't worry.
What's that?
I said, we're getting to those. Don't worry.
So, I mean, I guess it's kind of cool, because I guess people must just sort of recognize the things that, you know, you go out of your way to promote that you're always associated with. I mean, I'm not going to always be associated with G.I. Joe, so.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess Hack Slash, I'm lucky. I guess sometimes you think of something and, you know, you just happen to catch it at the right time, and you're just damn lucky. So.
How'd you hook up with the two great artists so far in Caselli and...
Oh, Federica?
Yes, Federica. Thank you.
Well, Tifano, he was a guy that... He kind of had been doing some stuff for Devil's Due previous. He had done a Micronauts fill-in issue, and I just knew that he was this really energetic Italian guy that when I would send him emails, he would send back these really funny, not quite right English responses.
Okay.
instantly I got along with this guy because I'm like, he's a card. He's hilarious. But then it was when I thought of the Hack Slash thing, I was like, oh, man, shit, I've got to get this done because otherwise someone else can't think of it. So I asked Stefano, I was like, do you like horror? And then all of a sudden I realized what a stupid question that was because he's Italian. Of course he likes horror. So yeah, I mean, it was just really an easy, I mean, literally it was an overnight thing. It was like pitching the idea. The next day I got sketches. And, you know, I mean, obviously he's moved on to big time Marvel stuff. And I think that's great. And I think that's what he should be doing. But he'll always be a part of the thing. So, and Federica comes from a company in Italy, published Hack Slash, and Love Bunny, actually. And they, had this girl doing pinups in it, and I was like, God, these are great. Who is this? And that was Federica Manfredi, so I hired her to do the second two.
And who's going to be, is she going to be doing the monthly, or?
Oh, I wish. Actually, she's also roped into Marvel stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, I basically helped Marvel discover artists with her. But actually, the artist on the monthly is this really talented girl who I'm surprised, oh, I'm sure won't last long because Marvel will get her too, but her name is Emily Stone. She's really, really good, and she's really reliable. She did the whole first issue in a month, which blew my mind because that seems so rare these days, and she really did a nice job. So I think it's going to be a really great-looking book. And I think, you know, I've noticed with her, it's like by the 10th page, she was even better than her first pages. And I think by the time the fourth issue comes around, I'm going to have to let her go over to DC or Marvel, you know. So.
Well, Norton was telling me, you're like this, and it's great because you're a damn good artist yourself, and you're able to really find, you know, these really cool artists, and especially he said, you know, he was really impressed with everyone you were writing from Italy and everything. You know, I don't want to ask what your secret is because that should be yours and good for you, but are they out there? Is it easy, or do you feel you've just been fortunate to find these people at the right time?
It's definitely, it's a combination of fortunate, and then there's this the only technique I know, and it's not that difficult. It's just not, just be nice to people. Because I mean, you know, there's a lot of people like looking to do stuff but they want to make sure they work with the right person. So you treat them like a jerk in any way or they're not going to work with you. So, I mean, a lot of it's lucky. Once you meet one talented person, you ended up bumping into other talented people because talented people somehow end up associating with each other, I guess. And I know, you know, like in Italy, all the comic book artists know each other. They all, like, I don't know if they all hang out at the same coffee shop and, you know, do whatever Italians do. I don't know. But So I meet a lot of them that way. But and then just in general, I think it's like once you find someone, you know, just treat them with respect and just, you know, don't act like you're some hotshot and that they need you to do something. It's like if you want an artist to work with you and you really want them, you got to just beg. So, you know, and I think you have to be willing to give stuff up, too. I know, like on Loaded Bible, it's like just to get the artist to do it, I really want to make sure that they were compensated. So I think you should give up maybe either part of the ownership or the sales of the you know, the profits should go to them, you know, so. You got to treat people with respect. That's what I'm saying.
I hear you. How about writing? Does writing come easy for you?
I definitely wouldn't say it's easy, but I think it's actually easier than drawing, if only because it's a pure form of creation, which sounds like bullshit, but the truth is drawing involves some technical shit.
Right.
It's like, it just drive you crazy. And writing, I mean, basically, once you have the format down, that's the end of that. You're just writing. You're just pouring shit out and typing, you know? So, yeah, I mean, writing is sort of sometimes like a welcome change, like get home after drawing and just being able to be like, oh, thank Christ. And I can just pour some crap out on a piece of paper and be like, yeah, that's funny and weird, you know, whatever. And sometimes drawing, you know, you can get hung up on the stupidest thing, someone's eyelashes or, you know, a table leg, and you're like, what the hell am I doing? You know, it's like these little technical details can ruin your creativity.
Where did the format of writing come from you? Was it just either in comic books, or did you go the route of, you know, the Robert McKee story, or, you know, did you look at books on writing and things like that?
I think I was lucky because I get scripts every month, you know, so before I draw it, you know, I get a script, and so I'm so familiar with the format because I've been translating things into art for a while. So basically, whoever I've worked with and that, you know, whatever writers that have written stuff for me, which is, you know, Blaylock and Brian Jerwa and Andrew Dabb and Paul Jenkins and whoever else I've worked with, like, their script style is what I stole. So, you know, that really worked out probably nice for me because, you know, I get to see what worked best for an artist, and I kind of get to take the best of each of their little formats. So.
Okay. Back to the origin of Hack Slash. Everybody knows you're a huge horror movie fan. And it was interesting to see that despite the surface similarity, you really weren't a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's like I'm not a fan of it because I honestly just never really seen it. I saw the first movie when I was 15, I think.
Okay.
15 or 16. And I liked the movie. It was good. But then, you know, when I moved to Minneapolis, I was working a lot and I didn't have cable. So, when Buffy came out, I didn't have cable, and that was a cable show there. So,
okay.
You know, I never caught like the first four seasons. So after that, I never got into it. In a rerun, I have seen at least half of the singing one, and I've seen the full one where Buffy's mom dies, and that was a really interesting episode because it was really well filmed. But other than that, I don't know anything about the show. I don't really. I mean, when people tell me about it, or like my girlfriend who watched the show and knows the show really well, or my brother, I'll say, you know, hey, here's what I want to do for the next Hack Slash, and I go, no, you can't, Buffy did it. You know, so I'm like, fuck you, Whedon. But I mean, I think it's just, you know, we come from the same thing. We both read comic books religiously. We both watch a lot of horror movies. The difference is he's wildly successful and I'm not. And but I mean, I think, you know, it's the same genesis. So I make sure I don't copy him, but I know I wasn't influenced because I don't have the familiarity with the show. So.
No, if anything, I think in Hack Slash, you know, it's really more the Jamie Lee Curtis and the Sissy Spacek and stuff of your love of horror movies that really are the genesis of that. Whereas Buffy really, she was never a victim, and I think your character started as a victim and having, you know, certainly a different mother than Buffy's mother in the lunch lady. So yeah.
Well, and one of the things I like, I mean, the way I think about it is like, yes, there's probably surface similarities. I think Girl Fighting Monsters is definitely a surface similarity. But then
sure.
I think, yeah. Well, shit, Red Sonja's got that too. And and then I think, you know what? I mean, if you come right down to it, it's like Spider-Man and Superman both got red and blue costumes and they both fight crime. It's like, so I mean, there's always going to be similarities. And that's cool. And I mean, you know, I guess I wish I kind of, and both in two ways, I'm sort of, well, I'm glad I never saw Buffy because then, you know, then I don't have to worry about having ever been totally influenced. On the other hand, like, man, if I didn't know, and I probably wouldn't know what to avoid, and maybe I wouldn't have something that people sometimes think is similar. So, but I just live with it.
Well, that's okay. And glad to see that beyond the comic books and beyond the monthly comic book, which is great, that the movie is in production and, you know, a whole different audience is going to be introduced to Hackslash. What can you tell us about the progress of the movie production?
It's weird because I don't have anything to like gauge movie production by, because obviously it's my first time ever doing this, but I feel like I'm really lucky because they actually keep me in the loop. Right before I talked to you, I was talking to the director, you know, and he and I will just bullshit on the phone, and he'll tell me, well, here's what we're doing with the script, and here's what they're talking about casting and when they're deciding to do this. And so, like, they keep me in the loop, and I feel like, you know, most people probably don't have that experience, you know. Like, I'm sure most people just sort of, you know, most comic guys or novelists that sell a movie, you sell the rights, and then, you know, 2 years later, they're like, hey, you want to come to premiere? And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. So, it's really interesting. So, yeah, I mean, at the point we're at now, they're kind of doing the tweaks on the script and getting ready to sort of, you know, go out. I guess they sort of like go out and offer to different agencies for casting. And so, I mean, they're at that point, but like when they'll do it, it's I'm not sure, but I know that everybody's like happy. So that's good.
That's cool. No, I hope it does happen. I know you have an interesting theory on, you know, horror movies. I think everybody pretty much feels the same way, that there are really good horror movies and that just good bad horror movies. So in the last 2 years, can you put some in both columns and tell people what to see and which ones are like the guilty pleasure ones that are terrible but fun to watch?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's weird because a lot of stuff that's been released theatrically recently in horror is either really good or just bad, not good bad. Because it used to be a certain level of naivete went into good bad movies, and we sort of lost that in so much things as remakes now, that when something is bad, it's just sort of like, how could you screw that up? You know, but really good stuff. I thought Hostel was great.
Cool.
Slither is fantastic. I think everybody should watch Slither. Descent, I really liked. That was a really good horror film.
Now, is the British ending better than the American ending of Descent?
You know, I'd never seen the American version. I only saw the English version. And I was like, oh, so they did make it happier. Because, you know, obviously, like, you get to the end of the British one, you're like, Jesus. Whoa, you know?
Yeah.
That was heavy. It was really intense. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, those were really three great films. And all the people that made those films were, like, obviously loved the genre and stuff, too. I really liked the film Abominable, which is a Bigfoot, killer Bigfoot movie.
Okay.
Highly recommend that one. And let's see. It's just like in slasher films, there hasn't been a lot of good stuff because everything is a remake.
Yeah, and all remakes of Japanese films.
Yeah, and in, you know, you're getting the remakes of the Japanese, and then you're getting remakes again of slasher movies. Like, Texas Chainsaw 1 and 2.
Yep.
First one I thought was really pretty good, didn't see the second one. But I know movies that were terrible was the Pulse, which was a Japanese remake, was just awful. it was punishingly awful. So, but it's like, yeah, it's just so hard to find good bad anymore. I don't see a lot of it.
How are you going to see this one that's out now about the killer aborigine or whatever?
Oh, Primeval?
Yes.
It's actually about a killer alligator.
Oh, thank
you. I don't want to ruin it for you. They're trying to make it look like... It's true. The way they've, I mean, I think they realize, you know, January is typically dumping grounds for
films.
So, you know, they realize, oh, shit, we made a killer crocodile movie and no one's going to come see this, which is unfortunate because I love killer crocodile movies. But this one, you know, they've been marketing it like it's a serial killer. It's the greatest serial killer in history, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The previews give you nothing. You don't see anything. it's just a giant alligator movie. So.
What about Turista? How did that look?
I really wanted to see that one, but somehow I missed it.
Okay.
What I hear is it was entertaining, but it's just kind of a, you know, kind of takes off a lot from some other films, which is, not surprisingly. It's you know, once one thing is successful in Hollywood, you get a bunch of clones. So obviously Hostel is your, the tourist, torture films.
Okay.
So
okay.
I think Turista is probably just fell in that realm. Didn't get to see it though. You know what, they actually had this, that horror fest where they play like 8 films, which they did in November. Did you hear anything about that?
No, but I wanted to ask you how much you either go to horror cons as a participant or as just, you know, an attendee.
I do both. If there is a horror show and I didn't think to set up, I'll be like, oh shit, well I'm going anyway, and I'll just hang out. Like,
okay.
And I'll go to all horror. I mean, I went to a horror convention in the middle of Ohio that no one else was at. It was literally just the guests and me and Chris Crank. I mean, I'm not kidding. It was it. So we'll go to all of them. We'll hang out. We'll just, you know, because it's always a good time. So.
And Hack Slash is doing well with the horror crowd and everything? Do they like the books?
Yeah, I think they do. They're interesting because they are the ones who will tell you what they think. Real,
sure.
Real easy. They don't have any problem telling you if it sucks. So, but it's cool because I know that on, you know, the websites visited by horror fans, you know, the Fangorias or the Joe Blow or the, you know, the Horror Channel, they review the books, they put it on their message boards. So, I'm lucky that they've found it, they picked it up, they're telling their friends about it. So, I'm really lucky that way because, you know, that's not necessarily a crossover audience. Yeah, it doesn't always work out, but when it does, you just have to think of the readers that are out there promoting for you. So,
were you a fan of the old Warren, Eerie and Creepy? And did you ever do any Vampirella or anything like that?
No, I didn't. And actually, you know, it just got bought by Fangoria, so they're actually they're going to be doing Vampirella stuff now.
Wow.
Yeah, which is cool because I think they'll probably do a very different thing than what Harris was doing. But I mean, when I was a kid, my dad actually was into Vampirella magazines, the Warren stuff.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, I would get those, and they were always. I mean, you know, I'm like 12, 13 years old, and I'm like, my eyes are bulging out of my head because Vampirella's sexy lady. But but I mean, I love that stuff. I would love to see a return to that kind of horror. There was a certain sort of elegance to it. It was always sort of, I mean, whether it was eerie or creepy or Vampirella, they were always sort of. They're often kind of beautiful. They're often really well drawn, like Rudy Nebrees or something. It wasn't, you know, really good stuff, just really beautiful stuff.
Or imported art from, like, you know, some of the great Filipino artists or
a lot
of great Italian artists as well. No, I always enjoyed that stuff. You know, it's a competing company, but any thoughts on Ashley Wood's Doomed that IDW has been putting out recently?
And this is, I mean, I think that I know the guy's talented. I'm not really a fan of that sort of art style for whatever reason.
Okay.
So I haven't picked up a lot of that stuff, but this is that magazine they're doing monthly that Ashley Wood put together. What's it called?
Yeah, Doomed, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Doomed, yeah. I haven't read it. I should. It looked like it was sort of a partial return to that sort of magazine, but to me, the Ashley Wood stuff is such a modern art style that I didn't see it as like a, you know, the same thing as having like Rudy Nebrees or somebody drawing something, but I should check it out.
Well, and it's not just, I think Ash is, like, behind it, but I know it's not just his stuff, and they do have some kind of, some occasional styles that do harken back to that old Warren style.
I'm definitely going to check that out then.
Well, there you go. Because, I was almost wondering if Josh was even considering a similar type of format for any of, you know, the horror stuff that you guys are doing.
Well, you know what one of my goals is? Is someday, I mean, if Hank Slash gets made into a movie, and if it actually, you know, if we get a lot of readers, you can actually do that sort of thing where you just spin things out and make them sell, you know? Like, you do the Morgan Mindy, the spin-off of, you know, whatever. I always wanted to do, like a Hack Slash magazine, and that would be a chance to see, like, one story of Hack Slash and then do a bunch of, like, cool, you know, horror,
absolutely,
horror stuff. Black and white, just like it used to be. I think that'd be awesome.
Absolutely. No, I'm a big fan of that, too. Did you read the Marvel Black and White Monster stuff, too?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Very cool.
Yeah, love that stuff. I was always a big fan of the, I can't remember which one, but it was Satana was in it. And I always thought that was
so cool. Yeah, I know. Yeah, and
Paul
even
Devore, I think it was, or it was good stuff.
I get it confused with my EC stuff. Atlas even had some interesting horror stuff as, you know, briefly as they were around for those couple of years.
Oh, I have everything Atlas ever put out, so.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, I remember that Crankcast. Was it you? Were you the Atlas guy that was going crazy about all that stuff?
Yeah. I have all that stuff, you know, Man Monster and, you know, I can't think of the top of my head, the Spider Guy,
Planet of the Vampires.
Yeah, Planet of the Vampires by Larry Hama.
Loved it.
Yeah, man, that was a great thing.
That was really cool.
Stuff.
You bet.
Yeah, we're big fans. I tried the Tarantula, that was the name of the Spidey guy.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was cool because their stuff was such obvious nicks and rip-offs of other things, but they did it with such zest, you know?
Yeah. Well, Tarantula, before it became a Spider-Man knockoff, was that really cool Howie Chaykin idea, too.
Yeah.
You know, that just...
All those, you know, the Scorpion started out like a pulp hero, like a sort of... 1947 guy?
That's what I was thinking of, was the Scorpion. Yeah. That's right.
Phoenix was the same thing. The character Phoenix started out as like a, the guy didn't have powers. He was like a secret agent. And by the end, you know, he was some kind of flying guy with wings or whatever. that's in the span of four issues. I mean, that's not even like over. Yeah, that's just great.
Well, tell me about Loaded Bible, because I love the first one. I am looking forward to the second. Do you know, is there an idea of when the second one will be released?
I think, you know, we were supposed to come out in January. I've got to learn my lesson because, I get the script. I had the script down in like mid-August, and I'm like, it's going to come out in January, no problem. Of course, people get sick and blah, blah, blah. Like both, the artist and the colorist both had pneumonia. I think now we're going to do probably like mid to late February, but we'll get it out in February. But the second one, you know, the first story kind of gave you an introduction to the world, kind of set it up, and did, you know, it was a little bit of a sort of political sort of allegory, whatever. The second one is sort of more character-driven. It's more about Jesus's sort of what does he do once he leaves leaves Vatican City, and all of a sudden he's no longer got a plan. His life isn't sketched out. He's gone from being, you know, sort of like the ultimate celebrity to sort of being just another guy. And how does he deal with that? And what's, you know, so it's kind of him trying to figure out his mission. And then in the meantime, there's lots of boobs and vampires exploding and gore. So
that's awesome.
It's a character sketch with the standard Tim Seeley thing.
And I'm pleased to hear that you actually got some positive feedback from the religious corners, which I think is great.
I was totally surprised. I had to rethink my stance on just about everything after that. Because, I mean, these guys were really cool, and they not only got it, they got it in a way that people who weren't even religious and were offended didn't get it. So, you know, which blew my mind. And, you know, I mean, it was
What did they say?
You know, the one was, you know, and this was amazing, too. The guy was a pastor in Florida. So two things I didn't think would ever pick up my book. But he was just real practical. He was like, you know what? I know what you were going for. I totally see that it wasn't an insult to the man. It was an insult to the way that the institution is run and the way that it sort of tries to, you know, blend with government. I was like, wow, this guy's totally on. But he totally liked the boobs and the vampires and stuff, too. So
there you go.
So, I mean, it's great. I mean, I think you'll get people who are reactionary just to be reactionary or be pissed off without – I mean, there's plenty of religious people who were angry about it. I know Image got letters, but they didn't read it, you know? So,
sure.
All they see is, Jesus wouldn't fight vampires. What are you trying to get away with? And it's like, well, just trust me. There's more to it, you know? So.
Well, that's excellent. I mean, you're right. I mean, that is the problem. People will take things on the surface and not really, you know, examine the book on its own before making a judgment. And
right, exactly.
And so that's great. And also, just I like it because it's a funny story. It was a good action story, and I appreciated the humor behind it as well. It was great, and no, I really do look forward to number two. And
thanks,
I know I know you got Norton working on it. Who else?
A coup in its way.
So that's cool. Who else will be drawing it?
Mark Aylard, who was the inker on the first one,
cool.
Returns because. At least foreseeable future, I just can't think of doing anything without Mark Engler because he's awesome. And then, it's, colored by, the same guys as last time with, Russ Lowry kind of taking the reins from Jason. So, it's the same company though, same, Rex Justice. So it's going to look very similar to the first one. We're trying to keep it in that same sort of tone. But on the upside, you get great Mike Norton artwork. And I think, you know, it's weird because I think Unloaded Bible was his chance to really cut loose, and he did. I mean, he just did what he wanted. He didn't feel so. I think sometimes, you know, Mike is nervous or something, and he feels like he can't do something. But a little bit, he knew I didn't care. I mean, I just wanted him to do Mike Norton stuff. So it looks great.
That's fantastic. Can we talk about the Troma anthology that you're helping put
sure,
together?
Yeah,
great.
It's definitely something. It's down the line. I wish I could get it done faster, but because everyone is working on it. Is doing it in true Troma fashion and doing it only for the love. It has to be pushed into their schedules. So, but yeah, it's an OGN, an anthology type book of, basically what I like to liken it to is the DC did the Bizarro World books,
mm-hmm.
where they basically let all these indie guys do whatever they wanted with, their characters and just tell really fun stories. The Troma book is basically the same thing, except it's not cute and it's not all ages really, but, it's, you know, I mean, just a lot of indie comic guys, a lot of mainstream comic guys, getting to, who are fans of Troma, getting to kind of do either a remake, a sequel, or a prequel to an existing Troma product.
Very cool. So. And how many stories is it going to end up being?
It's like 12 to 15 right now. It's, you know, some things are people who are so busy that it's kind of up in the air whether they'll finish on time. So, but basically it's, yeah, it's between 12 and 15. We've got guys like Sean McKeever. I've got V. Clay Moore. Kalman Andrzejewski drew one. Andrew Dabb wrote me a story. Actually Trent Haga, who wrote, Toxic Avenger 4, and stars as the diaper mafia leader.
Wow.
wrote a story for it. So yeah, it's really cool. It was just, you know, a lot of guys who I didn't know were Troma fans, who I wouldn't have expected to be really into it, were all about doing this, so.
That's really great. And Lloyd Kaufman has got to be thrilled. You're a friend of Lloyd's, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, we've met a bunch of times, and I like to call him Uncle Lloyd because he's the uncle you always wish you had.
Sure.
He's just a weird old dirty guy who loves to make awesome movies. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, and he was really cool about this whole thing. I pitched it to him quite a while ago, but just schedule-wise, it took me a while to sort of get around to it. And then my brother and I did some work on the Troma film Poultrygeist, which just came out. We just did some designs for the the evil fast food restaurant in the movie. So then when we started doing that, we started talking to Lloyd more. And they were really into the idea. Lloyd is obviously a huge comic book fan dating back years. I mean, the guy's a good friend of Stan Lee's. So,
wow.
You know, I mean, and so they, you know, he was just really cool with doing it, and they gave us so much freedom, and it's pretty cool. It's funny because we actually, you know, the guys from South Park, Matt Stone and Trey Parker, did their first thing was a Troma film called Cannibal the Musical. So, it was a musical about the Alfred Packer and his expedition that got lost and had to eat each other.
Okay.
And it's a musical, so it's really funny. But we might even be doing a story with, you know, from that film, so it'll be pretty cool. It'll be Matt Parker and Trey, you know, or Matt Stone and Trey Parker approved, which is like one of the coolest things I could ever hope for.
That's cool. So, yeah, absolutely. No, as soon as I heard about this, I thought it was great. And very cool that you're, you know, the guy that's really putting it together and everything. I think that's fantastic.
Well, thanks, man. I think, I mean, you know, the Troma stuff, it's obviously there's a certain kind of person who likes films that are either, like, you know, they're not high budget. Some of them are sort of intentionally stupid.
Sure.
but, I mean, I think if you can really appreciate the energy and the love put into those things, and some of them are even have such great stories, they kick the crap out of a lot of Hollywood films. You know, it's really cool to see that other people out there jive with that, and they want to add to that sort of mythology of these films and stuff. So,
do you ever see yourself maybe wanting to do a movie along the line, and maybe doing a low budget kind of horror film or something?
I don't know, man. I just think about what goes into making a comic book, you know? And, like, you know, it's a lot of work, and there's a lot of people to deal with. But, you know, I mean, it's like seven people. And then I think about a film, and times that by 100.
Sure.
And then I think about the problems you have on a comic book, and I'm like, dear God. So, I don't know. I mean, like, we've talked about it, and if I ever did it, I would do it with, like, Chris Crank and all those kind of guys, and we would just, like, have no money, but it would be the most pure of heart, you know, thing we could do, like, be just for the love, you know? So, I mean, you know, I kicked it around, and I made a terrible movie for Troma, actually, called Make Your Own Damn Comic Book, which is, like, a little instructional film. It's, like, 12 minutes long. I'm the worst actor of all time. so it's on the film Parts of the Family, I believe the film is called. It's on the DVD of that. If you want to see it and see how terrible of an actor I am, check it out. It's pretty amusing, so...
Did you do a book version of that or no?
No, it was just Troma actually did a movie called Make Your Own Damn Movie.
Right.
And then on that DVD, there was also a whole collection of stuff like, you know, make your own cultural movement, make your own damn novel, it was just all these little instructions with interviews with people. I mean, they did Stan Lee, they did Messy Stench, they did all these people. And so we made a film for that, but it's just, you know, pure dumb luck on our part. They forgot to put it on the DVD set. So, which is probably a good thing, because ours is the worst film in there, for sure.
Okay.
But, so they put it on another DVD, but, It's just a little instructional thing. It's kind of entertaining. You could, I mean, it's really just fucking crude as hell, and there's lots of semen jokes and terrible things in it. But it is educational. I think it gives you some.
but there's some a lesson at the end of the semen, so it's okay.
Totally, yeah. And the, you know, it's pretty horrible, but what the hell? So, you know, if you get something out of it, you know, we couldn't resist. When you make something, I think that's how Troma films get made, and they're why they're so great. It's like, when you realize you have no money, it's balls out, man. You got to go all out. So,
that's cool.
You got to cover up your bad acting by being disgusting, you know. So.
Well, so let's talk about a book that you made that is good, How to Be a Comic Book Artist. And it's I think that's neat that while Josh did a how-to book as well, that he turned to you to do that second Devil's Due how-to book. So what was that like in terms of doing that kind of instructional book for people trying to become a paying artist?
Well, the hardest thing I had going with that book, and this was like a huge issue at first, because Josh asked me to do, hey, you want to do a how-to-draw book? And I was like, hell no. Because, like, there's so many how-to-draw books, and some of them are great. I mean, there's no way that, and I, you know, I'm not nearly the artist of like a John Buscema, and you know,
sure.
I've got How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, and I would never want to do something that I felt like I was trying to just rehash what someone who with 40 years of experience is telling people to do, you know? So I try to take an approach of like, what can I actually offer, and I don't want to try to tread on the feet of masters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So what the book is really about is less about how to draw, like how to make shapes and make, you know, shapes that may end up being arms and legs and heads and punching people. It's really more about, you know, sort of how to set a schedule, how to turn your work in, how to, you know, the best ways to scan, use of FTP sites, just all this stuff that's sort of on the perimeter of the actual job that I think people don't tend to think about.
Sure.
And I think, you know, and the thing is about making a how to draw book, to me, is that you can tell someone up and down how to draw, and the truth is the only way to learn how to draw is to just sit and draw, you know?
Right.
And to go to classes and take life drawing and all that kind of stuff. So, and it, you know, in the context of like a little pamphlet, I don't think I was going to be able to get that kind of stuff in there. So, but it's real realistic. I mean, it goes through a whole area of like, here's what sucks about this job, because I think people, you know, comic book job artist is like one of those jobs people look at, and it's sort of has the same sort of ring to it that like actor or porn star does, you know, it's like, sounds like such a great job, but it is, but people have to be explained what the downsides are.
Certainly.
And if you're not the kind of person that can handle being alone all day, you know, just like the things that people don't think about, you know, if you don't think you want to lose drawing as a hobby, because it used to be a hobby and it's the job, it's no longer your hobby. You know, it's just like all those sort of things that I don't think people consider. And this book is just, it's there to tell you, all right, I'm just going to tell you the bare bones, the facts, and, you know, you make your own decision. So.
No, and I think, you know, it's funny, that end of instruction, I think, is missing a lot of times in a lot of these how-to comic books, and it's nice to see someone who, you know, is doing the job say, this is the reality of the job, and these are the business things you might have to do, and as you say, you know, ways to make it easier, and also just some of the harsh realities of, understand that beyond the drawing, here's, like you say, here's the downside of the contract.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when I was a kid, and you know, I was like, oh, I want to be a comic book artist, and you get How to Draw Comics, and the picture it paints, I mean, it's a great book for learning how to draw, but the picture it paints is like, you know, the artist and the writer are sitting across from each other, and they're throwing flowers and happiness because they're making this great book, and everyone's happy, and, you know, it's like, it's just the sort of impression you get, because at the time, that's the Marvel way, you know, Smiling Stan and Jumpin' Jack, you know, doing these great books or whatever, and I think that's great, I think that's why it's a great book for kids to learn from, but I think, you know, it needed to be said, well, here's some other things about the job, and here's how to put together a double-page spread, because everybody screws this up, you know? So it was an attempt of kind of trying to do that, you know?
Very cool. Well, what's coming up for you?
Let's see. Hackslash ongoing series starts in May.
Very cool.
So we'll have ads and crap outs for that. Oh, Hackslash Chucky ships in March.
Congrats, yes. So,
yeah, that'll be a big, fun, stupid-ass book.
Sure.
And let's see, Demon Wars comes out this week of the January 17th, or yeah, 17th it ships.
Excellent.
And then I'll keep drawing Demon Wars, and hopefully I'll get that done sometime within my lifetime and start something else. So, yeah, that's about it so far. And I've got Joe Transformers issue 2 comes out next month, I think, February.
Outstanding. Well, we look forward to it, man. And Tim, I appreciate your time today. And Hack Slash is a lot of fun. And really looking forward to Loaded Bible 2. And when it's ready, I'll be right there in line to pick it up.
Thank you, John Centris.
Dude, my pleasure.
One of the great local Chicago creators in comics, Tim Seeley. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. You can find us at iTunes. Also our MySpace page, myspace.com/wordballoon. There's the Word Balloon website, which, by the way, is still in the midst of getting its facelift. So if you would, please follow the link to our Blogger site as well. You can either reach it by www.wordballoon.com or wordballoon.blogspot, wordballoon.com. Our ComicSpace page, comicspace.com/wordballoon. Always nice to make new friends both in MySpace and ComicSpace, and thank you very much for your support. Don't forget as well at other podcast locations beyond iTunes, places like Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, your votes there and reviews are always appreciated, as well as at iTunes. Dig.com, if you enjoy the show, do us a favor and register at Dig and let people know that you dig Word Balloon. And as always, if there are any questions or comments about the show, I can be reached at john@wordballoon.com. That's my email address. Thanks a lot for listening. Again, if you're in Florida, at the FX show in Orlando this last weekend in January, make sure you stop by and say hi. We're going to have a lot of floor interviews and panel interviews from the FX convention that I'll be sharing with you on upcoming Word Balloon episodes, and a few other episodes in the can coming up. So lots of new stuff on the way. Hope you've enjoyed some of the old shows that we've brought back in the recent weeks as well. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007. Thanks for listening.